Today on Wings, the topic is reproductive sovereignty. Remember this line from The Handmaid's Tale?
You girls will serve the leaders and their barren wives. You will bear children for them.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Today's Wings program discusses the concept of reproductive sovereignty and how it differs from that of reproductive rights. Among the points discussed is self-abortion. Wings has not tested any of the methods mentioned and advises seeking and evaluating further information. Here is interviewer Megan Murphy.
While feminism has fought for women's reproductive rights, for access to things like abortion and the pill, Mary Lou Singleton says we need to look beyond rights and towards sovereignty. Mary Lou is a midwife, nurse practitioner, and reproductive sovereignty activist.
I'd be interested to hear about the work that you do and how you came to that work.
I currently practice as a family nurse practitioner for pregnant women, infants, young adults, adults, and elders. I recently transitioned into that after 20 years practicing as a home birth midwife. I have an integrative health clinic. I'm an herbalist. I have an herb pharmacy here. I provide full-spectrum primary health care in a primary care setting.
And how did you get involved in midwifery?
So my whole life, from the time I can remember, I wanted to help women have babies. First, I was told that's a man's job. And then I was told that means you want to be an obstetrician. And then in college, I learned about midwifery in a contemporary context. And it was like a classic light bulb experience. This is what I've always wanted to do. I just didn't know it existed. So I immediately shifted gears and trained with several midwives around the country. And then eventually ended up in New Mexico and studied here and became a licensed midwife.
Now, the conversation around reproductive rights today is almost completely dominated by one, access to abortion, and two, access to the pill or other forms of hormonal birth control. What is your perspective on that conversation? You know, is there anything that's missing?
I think that there's this left-right polarization that's framed as like a liberal-conservative dichotomy. And the liberal people are fighting for, like you said, more access to birth control, access to abortion. Conservative people are fighting to end abortion rights. Many of them are fighting to criminalize birth control. As I have grown and matured in the fight for women's reproductive sovereignty, I kind of stepped back and realized, like, this is liberal patriarchy and conservative patriarchy jostling about how they want to control the women. And I do think that that liberal perspective of birth control and abortion, a lot of that is informed by male ruling class forces that want women to be sexually accessible without consequences to men, and also want to control the population. There are people in the ruling class who really want to lower the population, and they tend to really push for more birth control for all women, forcing birth control on people, especially poor women, women of color, women in the non-Western world, and then limited abortion freedom. They never push for abortion on demand and without apology. It's not really true abortion freedom. And then the conservatives, it seems like these ruling class men want this huge, desperate population that will work for slave wages, and they don't want anyone to have birth control or abortion because they want more people, because desperate people are easier to control. And also have this religious perspective of the traditional patriarchal family where women are owned by one man in the marriage contract and reproduce heirs for him.
You use the term reproductive sovereignty. What does reproductive sovereignty mean?
To me, reproductive sovereignty means women's health in women's hands. And it means that all decisions about reproduction are made by the woman herself in a full context where that woman is free of patriarchal forces who are coercing decisions and choices. So to get full reproductive sovereignty, we have to dismantle patriarchy. I believe to dismantle patriarchy, we have to dismantle capitalism, where women are the means of production of new people. And if we've done that, then we can come to this place. The goal of women having true freedom over their own reproduction, being sovereign in our lives. And part of what it also means to me is moving past this authoritarian model where women are trained to believe that our bodies are scary, our bodies are dangerous, we need authority figures to save us from our bodies. In true reproductive sovereignty, women trust their bodies. We know that certain things can happen where we might need access to experts who can help us, but for the vast majority of our reproductive functions, we and our friends can take care of it.
Now, a huge problem with the conversation around reproductive rights is that we're allowing both our rights as women and our reproductive health to be controlled by the medical establishment, as you've just talked about a little bit, and the pharmaceutical industry. How did this happen, you know?
There's a great book called When Abortion Was a Crime, and that book details the rise of the consolidated medical industry and the destruction of women's reproductive sovereignty in the United States. When physicians who are now medical doctors took over all of medicine, they criminalized all the other kinds of providers of healthcare. And one of their biggest threats to doing this was midwifery, because midwives in communities, every community had midwives. Midwives didn't just help women have babies. They were the women went to when fevers were too high for the mom's comfort level, when bones were broken, when someone had skin problems, when there were abscesses, when, you know, any health issue, the midwives took care of that. And those women also were the women who helped people with their dying processes and with death rituals. So the midwives were really integrated into their communities, and women trusted their midwives, and even men trusted midwives. This was in a time before antibiotics, before blood transfusions. This is like when people were just learning to, like, you know, wash your hands before you do surgery. People knew you were much more likely to die in that industrial hospital system than if you stayed out of it, especially for childbirth. And there was this problem of, how are we going to get rid of the midwives? Well, at this time, it's also before there was any kind of industrial birth control. Birth control was abortion. Abortion was incredibly common. Pregnancy wasn't considered real until you started to feel the fetus move. So it was considered regulation of the menses to end an early pregnancy. And the midwives were the primary providers of that. So the way the medical industry got rid of midwives was by criminalizing abortion. And that was very effective, because abortion has always been this shameful private thing. And women would get out in the streets and defend the midwife for, you know, I've had 8 births with her, she's great, everything was safe. People kept quiet about abortions and let the midwives be taken away and criminalized for providing abortion services. So the criminalization of abortion was about the destruction of autonomous midwifery and women's reproductive sovereignty.
What we're not talking about is the fact that self-abortion is actually not as difficult or dangerous as it's made out to be. What are the ways that women can self-abort? And, you know, how can women learn how to conduct abortions on themselves or on other women?
Well, luckily, our foremothers have been through this fight before, and also saw some of these changes happening, as, you know, we went from having some abortion freedom to losing that abortion freedom. So there's a lot of great literature and a lot of great resources out there for women to find these skills. One of my favorite is called A Woman's Book of Choices, and it's written by Carol Downer and Rebecca Chalker. In that book, they detail cervical massage. It's a form of abortion, self-abortion, that really works best for women who've already had a child, where the cervix is a little more open, and a woman can put her hands inside her vagina and reach up and feel her cervix and find the opening of the cervix and just mess with it until it's more open and more open and more open, and that will almost always induce a miscarriage. They also detail menstrual extraction, a method where a group of women together extract the contents of the uterus with gentle suction. A Woman's Book of Choices has instructions on how to do that. It has how to assemble the equipment. It talks about safety, how to make sure this is something that you're doing correctly. So those are two methods. Another method that a lot of women are using, which is less in our hands because of the pharmaceutical industry, is the drug called misoprostol or Cytotec, which is a drug that was originally designed to prevent stomach ulcers, but it's a strong prostaglandin, and it causes uterine contractions and expulsion of what is inside the uterus. Many women right now are buying misoprostol online and using that to self-abort. Womenonwaves.org details how to do a safe misoprostol abortion and has some information on how to access that medication. That's a little less exciting to me because we're still dependent on the pharmaceutical industry, which is something women certainly do not control. And then that leads to the issue of the drug called RU486 or Mifeprex that safely and very reliably induces abortion, especially if it's used with misoprostol. Providers like myself who have prescriptive privileges have to apply to get it from this one distributor, prove that we can legally do abortions in our state, and then we get one dose at a time, and then every dose has to be accounted for with demographic information on the woman you gave it to and what the outcome was. So they're collecting information on women through it too. And that's infuriating to me because that is an incredibly safe medication. I think it should be sold over the counter. I'm really, really disgusted that there's such a lockdown on this medication that's so safe. But because it effectively, safely, easily induces abortion, women can't access it.
As there's a real big focus on the right to the birth control pill and how important the birth control pill is to women's liberation, what do you think about the pill? And what's your perspective or critique of popular birth control methods in general?
Well, you know, I need to premise by saying I don't want any birth control methods to be illegal. But personally, I don't think the birth control pill is good for women. And I certainly don't think the long-term, the long-acting reversible contraceptives like the IUD and the implants are good for women. I think that these medications have very serious side effects. They have very serious risks. The hormonal birth control affects every cell in a woman's body. Any woman who's taken the pill can attest to how it affects our moods. We all realize that. I think what's most horrifying to me about the pill and other hormonal contraceptions is that all of those methods, a very, very common side effect is a complete suppression of libido. And that, I think that should be really scary to women, like the Stepford-esque aspects of that, of chemically neutering us, taking away our libido, and making us sexually accessible to penis and vagina ejaculatory intercourse. So I think there are a lot of problems. I would love to see a more widespread critique of hormonal birth control on the part of the radical feminist movement. There are studies from the 70s and 80s that the safest method of birth control for women is using barrier methods and natural family planning and withdrawal with early abortion as backup. But because we're all brainwashed to think that abortion is so terrible, it has to be avoided at all costs, it's the most horrible thing, to be responsible, you have to sterilize yourself, at least temporarily, women can't think straight about it, you know?
And what about, you know, the IUD? Do you think that's a good alternative?
Well, again, I don't want that option to be taken away from women, but I do think the copper IUD is it's uncomfortable for most women. The IUD insertion process is a very uncomfortable experience for women. It's usually painful for them. You know, there's this normalization of being female means you have to go through painful things when you get an IUD. And then when you have the copper IUD, even though you're not being affected by hormones every second of every day like you are with the hormonal methods, there's a constant level of inflammation in the uterus happening by having that foreign object in there. And I really worry about what that does to women's immune systems. I know anecdotally many, many women who say that they developed autoimmune issues and chronic pain issues very soon after getting an IUD or within a few years of getting an IUD. Some of them, their symptoms significantly improved after taking the IUD out. And then the copper IUD usually causes very heavy, crampy, painful periods. And that can lead to anemia, loss of work, loss of income, just debilitation, depression from having, a 10-day period where you're bleeding the whole time. So it's not a benign thing to do to a woman.
Like you say, feminists are not advocating to make the pill inaccessible or illegal. But feminists who have critiques of hormonal birth control and who advocate towards alternatives like the rhythm method or tools like DAISY, which is a fertility tracker, I've seen these feminists attacked pretty badly by liberal feminists in the U.S. Why are they so dismissive of critiques of birth control and of big pharma and of medical interventions in women's reproductive health more broadly?
When we start to critique how we're being forced to engage with patriarchy and the choices we're making in that engagement, inevitably people's feelings get hurt. And it's always interpreted as like my analysis of how the pill is not actually good for women gets read as, why are you hating on women who take the pill? So I think there's some of that classic liberal radical dynamic going on there. And then I think it's deeper that women have enormous medical allegiance to the medical industry. Women have enormous allegiance to that system of medicine. And we're all brainwashed into it from the time we're really young, that the pill was this liberation, that the doctors can help us, that we can be rescued from our bodies, that our moms almost died in childbirth, thank God for medicine, thank God for pain relief, that people don't want to disengage from what in many ways is an abusive relationship with big pharma and big medicine, because we all know what that's like when women start to come to consciousness of an abusive relationship. Often the reaction is to defend the abusive relationship further. So I think that's also going on. Holly Griggs-Ball, in her work, she says that she really thinks the pill has addictive qualities to it, that women get addicted to these drugs in the sense of becoming physically dependent on it, having withdrawal when they stop it, feeling as though they can't live without it. So that's probably leading to some of the allegiance as well.
On Wings, you're listening to an interview with Mary Lou Singleton, a U.S. midwife, nurse practitioner, and reproductive sovereignty activist. Singleton has been openly critical of a 2015 decision by the Midwives Alliance of North America to replace the words mother and woman with gender nonspecific terms such as person, in light of the fact that some people with functional female reproductive systems prefer to identify as male or as non-binary, meaning not choosing either male or female as their gender identity. The interviewer here is Megan Murphy.
I wanted to get back to midwifery for a little bit because there are some controversies that have happened in that field recently. And one of those controversies is the issue of men in the profession. And I wonder what you think about that.
Well, personally, I believe midwifery is a women's tradition and men have no place in it. Men have always wanted to control birth. It's the whole root of patriarchy that men want credit for the magic birthing power. I think that once midwifery got professionalized and stopped being women's health in women's hands and became a capitalist profession, it's a job now. And that makes it very difficult to defend why you believe in sex discrimination and who gets to do that job.
Another controversy, this new trend of using gender-neutral language to discuss women's reproductive capacity, like menstruators or pregnant people, in order to accommodate and be inclusive of trans-identified people. What do you think about this language?
I think that a lot of well-meaning people are pushing this, not really stepping back and looking at what gender ideology really means in terms of our ability to describe and fight patriarchal oppression and our ability to name sex-based oppression. Gender ideology is being relentlessly marketed. You know, People Magazine's selling it, Good Housekeeping is selling it. It's so brilliant that it's being marketed as the right way to think. It's being marketed as cool, and people don't step back and look at the forces shaping this cultural phenomenon that's obviously prevalent, widespread, and well-funded. It's not about women's liberation. It destroys our ability to describe sex-based oppression and how patriarchy developed and continues to be a system where male-bodied people control female-bodied people because of our ability to reproduce. If you want to have woman and female mean those things, like an identity now, okay, I would be willing to give you that if you can tell me, like, what is the name of the people that I fight for who are oppressed on the basis of biological sex? And these people are aborted in the womb because vulvas show up in ultrasounds. They're smothered in infancy because they don't have a penis. They're sold to men as rape and breeding slaves, and the world calls it child marriage. They are abducted by Boko Haram and forcibly impregnated and used as rape slaves there. They suffer court-ordered cesareans, and they're denied abortions. They go to jail for suspicious miscarriages. Could the genderists please offer me a concise name for that group of people? And if they can't, I'd like them to examine how it might be harmful to that group of people to no longer have a name for themselves and what they are collectively experiencing because they are of the female sex.
So what should the reproductive rights movement in the U.S. be doing?
I think that the people within the reproductive rights movement in the United States really need to stop being apologetic about abortion. I think we need to go back to rallying for abortion on demand and without apology. I think we need to put pressure on primary health care providers and OBGYNs. Anyone who provides primary health care for female people should be offering abortion services in their practice. We shouldn't have this abortion ghetto where women have to travel 300 miles because all the providers in their town are too cowardly to offer abortion services. Again, like that rallying cry of abortion on demand and without apology. When people say to me, oh, that's too much, I just respond, you know, if you disagree with abortion on demand and without apology, which women should be forced to gestate and give birth against their wills, and which women should be made to feel terrible about it? Because it's a very basic statement that is actually, you know, it's exactly what we need to be advocating for. Instead, we've fallen into this, oh, it needs to be safe but rare. Oh, abortion's always tragic. Oh, abortion's so sad. Like, abortion should be like any other healthcare procedure. When you have a problem with your health, you can go get treatment for that problem. A lot of that treatment isn't pretty to watch. A lot of that treatment is stuff we'd rather the problem hadn't happened to begin with, but we're not like, oh, well, nobody really likes mastectomies, but sometimes that's necessary for, you know, if people get breast cancer. No one really likes to think about, you know, having tonsils removed. Like, this is, it's a medical procedure. We should stop apologizing for it. An unplanned, an unwanted pregnancy is a treatable medical condition. So at that level of people advocating for, like, social, political change, I'd like to see that. Just push, being unapologetic, really pushing for full spectrum healthcare for women with no restrictions. On a more radical level, I'd like to see more women learning about their bodies, rediscovering self-abortion. There is a growing home abortion movement, which I'm very excited about. Abortion and birth are things that females do together. You have to break out of the individualism of capitalism. It's safer for you to do this with a friend. It's safer to do this with a sister because we're social animals, not because our bodies are dangerous and are going to, you know, develop all sorts of complications, but because our species has always done these things in groups of women. So I'd love to see groups of women forming and learning about their bodies, getting speculums, learning self-exam, learning how to visualize their cervix. Like my mentor, Carol Downer, says, you know, once you realize that cervix is 2 inches away and has a hole in it, it's a total game changer on how you think about abortion. And then moving from self-exam to practicing menstrual extraction and learning about safe self-abortion methods and helping each other with that. Because if we know how to do it ourselves, the authorities have a much harder time taking it away from us.
So there's a young woman listening right now. She wants to take control of her own reproductive health and her own body, and she maybe wants to help some of her friends do that as well. What's the first step? What do they do?
I would recommend they start looking at all the information that's out there that's been left for us by our wonderful foremothers on how to do that. Some good places to start, there's a book called Natural Liberty by the Sage Femme Collective, and that is an incredible resource for women, where it covers self-abortion methods from herbs to acupressure points to high-dose vitamin C supplements, and also details how to do menstrual extraction and early suction abortion. Also talks about how to safely use the medications. So that book has everything from, I don't have any equipment, I don't have any drugs, what can I do, to I want to take this further and help other women, like how do I assemble a home abortion machine. It's a great book, Natural Liberty by the Sage Femme Collective. You can get a free PDF online if you look for it. So looking for things like that, a woman's book of choices, a new view of a woman's body. There's a website called Sister Zeus that has a lot of information about this. And then realizing, again, like we have to heal ourselves from this hyper-individualism of capitalism and this horrible wound of patriarchy where we don't trust other women. Find one woman you trust and get to the point in your relationship where you can show each other your cervixes. And then you're going to be so, women who do that, their minds are blown and they really want to spread the gospel of self-exam. So that will, it will spread out in the community. So really breaking free from individualism and getting back into community is so important with learning how to do this, because we can't do this as individuals. We have to do this as sisters.
Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Oh, you're so welcome, Megan. It's a real honor. Thank you.
You just heard an interview with Mary Lou Singleton, a midwife, nurse practitioner, reproductive sovereignty activist, and founder of Personhood for Women.
That interview was conducted by Megan Murphy and edited for Wings by Robin Erickson. You can find the full 41-minute podcast at feministcurrent.com. Wings found 2 books from the women's self-help movement that are free to download as PDF files. They are Natural Liberty, Rediscovering Self-Induced Abortion Methods, published in 2008 by the Sage Femme Collective, and from another site, A Womb of One's Own, Taking Charge of Your Reproduction Without Doctors, by Jane Doe. To hear this and other Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org. You can also check our daily news feed at facebook.com/wingsradio. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, author of the book The Gift in the Heart of Language, The Maternal Source of Meaning. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. I'm the Wings series producer, Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.